Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 114, recorded August 7th, 2013. Stuart Chaffee. Triangulation is brought to you by Shutterstock.com with over 26 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code Triangulation8. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/triangulation. And by Tonks Coffee. Tonks offers a bi-weekly subscription to the best beans in the world. They source directly from the growers, roast them, and ship them within 24 hours to give you the freshest, bestest coffee you've ever tasted. For a free sample, visit tonks.org/triangulation. That's tonx.org/triangulation. It's time for Triangulation, the show I look forward to all week because it's a chance for me to sit down with some of the most interesting, the brightest minds in technology and talk with them and give you a chance to ask your questions, too. That's the third part of Triangulation. It's me, our guest, and you in the chat room. So if you're watching live, get your questions ready because we have a true legend in studio with us today. In fact, really the inspiration for everything I do and did at Tech TV. Stuart Chaffee is here. He started the earliest and longest running computer television show, I'm sure, Computer Chronicles.
20 years worth.
It is such an honor. It's such a pleasure to see you.
Pleasure to be here with you.
Stuart reminded me we'd actually worked together for HP for
long
a while.
Time ago.
Long time ago. Just like a road tour, roadshow.
Right.
But I probably didn't tell you then. I was probably too shy to tell you. What a huge impression you made on me. And by the way, everybody who I've mentioned to that you're going to be on the show, when did you start Chronicles?
Started as a local show in 1981, just in the Bay Area.
We were talking about that, KCSM.
At KCSM, the local PBS station in the Silicon Valley area.
But you were not, were you a geek? Were you?
I was a geek. I was an average geek. I mean, not a coder geek, but a
user. Anybody in the Silicon Valley at that time, and I was too, I was in San Jose,
right,
felt the buzz.
Absolutely.
Knew that something was happening.
Well, if you want to hear the history of the start of the show, it's really interesting because it was sort of viral before anybody had ever heard of that word. So the idea at the time, of course, back in the early 80s when personal computers were just coming out,
There
was no information infrastructure. There was no web yet.
No.
There were no magazines.
It was user groups, pretty much.
Exactly. So I would go to these user group meetings and see 60 guys sitting around in a basement somewhere and, you know, 100 different houses around the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And I said, wait a minute, why not televise a users group meeting? Have 1 million people watch it instead of 100 guys.
You know, it's so funny because that's exactly what I say when I do my radio
right.
show. This is a user group.
Exactly.
You don't know what a user group is, but that's what we're doing.
That was the genesis of the show. So we said,
why don't we
do a live users group? So we got Jim Warren to come in, who did the West Coast Computer Fair, as you recall.
He used to ride around
exactly.
the West Coast Computer Fair on roller skates.
Right.
He's quite the legend. Was quite the legend.
And all his buddies. It was a live show every Thursday night from 8 to 9.
Now, you didn't host it.
I didn't host it in the first year.
You were the station
it.
Manager.
I was the manager of the station, so I was able to say, hey, let's do it. I didn't have to ask anybody.
Right.
So I said, let's do this show.
So this is because you had a passion for this stuff.
I had a passion. I thought there was a need.
And there was a need.
There was a need. I mean,
this was in the era when software was coming in baggies. And
if you got a manual, open up the lid.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody could figure out anything. As I said, there was no place to find the answers except users groups.
Now, archive.org has all 20 years of the computer articles, Computer Chronicles.
Right.
And it's amazing because you could do it by keyword. Do they have the first episode on here, I wonder?
I believe they do.
From 1981 with Jim Warren?
No, we do. The local ones, we were never archived, unfortunately.
Well, this is from 1983.
I mean, they were live. Those first ones were live. So
there was nobody recording it.
We didn't even record them at the time. They were just live shows.
There it is, KCSM San Mateo.
That's
and I like the high
one.
Quality CG that you were using.
Well, it's 30-some years ago now.
It's fun. You know, 30 years doesn't seem that long. And
it's
yet,
long.
Boy, a lot has changed in tech. Yeah, the capabilities
Absolutely.
And so forth.
Yeah.
So I encourage people to go to archive.org.
Whoop.
Should we see a little bit of
the
it
old
here?
Countdown?
Let me, you know what, I have to get the audio coming out of the right port here. Let me press my option key so we can see this. You should be able to hear it now, John. There we go.
Yeah, this was the old original opening.
Was this local still in 1983?
No, this is national. This
was now
national.
PBS.
This one national actually in January of 83.
And this is what information technology looks like then. What's nice is how high quality this is. There's a lot of Computer Chronicles on YouTube. It's not this
micro-focus.
This is nice.
Well, it's all pirated stuff.
This is not. This is legit.
The archive is the real stuff.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you the story of how we got them all in archive, because it's a pretty interesting story.
The story of this continuing evolution.
Yes, this is...
Is it Jim Warren still on this?
No, this is me. This is the first of the national episodes. and I cringe when I look at
myself.
And
the guy next to you...
In the very first show.
You look exactly the same.
Yeah, right.
And the guy next to you, wait a minute, we got to pause it here, is legendary Gary Kildall of DR Research.
DRI, Digital Research.
He created DR DOS, which was a competitor to Microsoft's DOS.
CPM.
He wrote CPM.
Right.
How did you get him on the show? I mean, this guy is not an entertainer.
No.
Not a presenter. He's
a great...
A geek.
Actually, when we found the local show was very successful, it's an interesting story too. We started as a local show.
Right.
And even though there was no web at the time, there were still BBSs.
Oh, yeah.
And there were geeks all over the country.
Oh, yeah.
And they started saying, hey, there's this damn...
I ran one. And I remember watching Jim Warren doing the show. I thought it was the best thing ever.
There's this users group thing that's on TV every week. So these guys started calling their local PBS stations saying, there's this TV show about this stuff. Why don't you carry it? So by answering the phone, in about 3 months, we were on 32 stations around the country.
That's awesome.
That's when I said, this is probably
Something's
a good idea.
Here. Yeah.
So let's go after it. So we started looking for sponsors, underwriters, for a national production of this. And one of the ones we talked to was Digital Research, DRI. And Gary was totally supportive. And I also wanted to find somebody to co-host with me, because I'm not super geek. I'm just average guy geek.
Right.
I'm Best Buy geek, you know,
right.
Not coder geek. And Gary said, that's a great idea. I'll do it with you. And Gary, you know, he was Allen Pacific Grove is where his company was. He was a pilot also. He would fly up to San Mateo in his plane on Saturday to do the show with us, or drive in his Lamborghini. So it was always quite an adventure.
How fun. He's the guy, of course, quite famously, when Bill Gates came to IBM came to Monterey saying, we need a new operating system for this PC that's going to come out in 1981.
Right.
He was in his plane, didn't meet with IBM.
Well,
it has a feeling of legend, doesn't it?
But it's just as good. It's actually that day they came was his wife's birthday.
Oh, even better.
He said, I'm sorry, I committed to my wife, we're going to go flying.
Good for him.
Right, exactly.
Except he lost a little bit of money.
Yeah. Well, he didn't have to worry about money.
Good.
But what killed Gary was just he was annoyed at what happened. He was annoyed at
That Gates guy. Gates didn't even have a DOS.
Exactly.
He went out and bought Seattle DOS. But that's another day.
It drove Gates crazy till the end of his life, which, as you may know,
Gary,
he died very young.
Very sad, yeah.
One of the newest microcomputers, the HP 150.
But there he is.
Hewlett-Packard. Gary, are we at the end of the line in the evolution of computer hardware, or are we...
That's pretty funny to say in 83, isn't it?
That we're still asking that question sometimes, you know? But apparently we weren't,
thank goodness. No, I guess not.
We weren't at the end of the line for Chronicles, because you did it for another...
Just 20 years, yeah.
20 years, and then Netcafe after that.
We did six years of Netcafe. We switched from sort of hardware, software, computer stuff to the web culture when the web became big.
So... As you're doing this show, everything's changing rapidly.
You bet. Every week.
Tell me about was it challenging to keep up? How did you manage that?
It was a nightmare. I mean, it was kind of more complicated then than even it is now. Because as you mentioned before, I mean, things were really complicated then. You didn't just buy a computer, turn it on, and go.
You had to be a
dip switches. You had boards to install. You had settings to make. So it was pretty complicated. I mean, luckily we had a staff. And so we would set up an editorial calendar for the year. Say, here are the shows, the subject we want. Each show is about one particular subject, one kind of application.
Right.
And we'd research it. And basically our job was to do all the hard work for the audience. Instead of the audience having to run around and check out 50 different versions of this piece of technology, we would do it and say, these are the 4, 5, 6 best examples we found. And we'd bring in people who knew about it as guests on the show and help people make their decisions about technology.
Do you feel like you became an expert by doing this?
I wouldn't say an expert, but knowledgeable. I mean,
you were always good because you would ask the question. You were representing the viewer.
Exactly.
You would ask the question.
I was the viewer.
You were, yeah.
I was the viewer.
Yeah.
I would annoy a lot of people, too, because we'd have these people come on from the different companies and they would want to give their
questions.
Sales pitches.
Yeah.
And I would say, stop.
Yeah.
There was one time, matter of fact, when somebody did a Google search for me, and one of the things that came up was the most hated man in America. Because they thought I was so rude that I wouldn't let these damn computer people go on and on and on and foam at the mouth.
You were so right on, because they otherwise were doing show-length commercials.
Exactly.
And so...
So we needed these companies and their products and their people to cooperate.
Right.
They couldn't take over the show.
Right. George Morrow, who...
Well, he was a co-host for a while.
Brilliant guy, headed Morrow Design.
Yep. It was a very funny show with George, by the way. George was a guest before he was a co-host on there. And I don't know if you remember, George had developed one of the first portable computers.
Yes.
With a 5.5-inch
I know, I really wanted
drive.
One. And it was cheap, and it came with WordStar. It was awesome.
And there's this great show in which he's in there talking about 5.25 inches is the standard. That's never going to change. These people with these 3.5-inch disk drives, that's nonsense.
In a way, that's the funniest thing. It happens again and again. Bill
of
Gates
course,
saying 640
course,
megabytes. You'll never need more than that. I'm sorry, kilobytes.
Yeah.
You'll never need more than that. It's a good thing to remember as you're sitting here now in the 21st century that you're still going to feel that way, that, gosh, you know, we have terabyte, multi-terabyte
exactly,
drives. That's
exactly.
Who'd ever need more than that?
Right. You never know.
Grows and grows.
You never know what tomorrow brings.
Is that one of the lessons? What are some of the lessons you've learned over this 20 years?
Don't listen to what they tell you from the computer companies.
They're always wrong.
They're always here to change the world and save the world
right.
and make it a better place.
Right.
Generally, they're there to make money. So you have to sort of ignore all that
That's
stuff.
A really good point, yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that we learned in doing the show was the guy who ran the company knew the least about the product.
Never talk to a CEO.
Exactly.
Always.
It used to be so funny. You know, we'd like the CEOs because they had name recognition and
right.
so on. And they'd have some little geek guy, but hey, you press this button. Over
here. But there must have been some. I mean, Gates was pretty technical. There were some that were literally.
Gates was.
George Morrow was pretty technical.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I mean, as we went later on, I mean, CEOs tend to be business people.
Right.
You know, not geeks.
Michael Dell you interviewed early on.
Dell, that's a long story. I would never buy a Dell computer.
Really, why not?
He was very rude to me.
Was he a young whippersnapper when he was
no,
on?
No, it wasn't that young whippersnapper. It was, I don't know. Dell was big at the time.
Why was he rude to you?
Can't tell you, but he was very, very, very rude. And I bear grudges. So I've never bought a Dell product.
We're very much alike in that regard, as people will tell you.
And, I mean, there's stories of other guys, too. I mean, we have a long history with Steve Jobs, by the way, which is a sad story, too.
Well, tell me about some of that. When was the first time you met Steve?
When we first started Chronicles and we were looking for sponsors, we obviously went down the road to Apple and said, wouldn't you guys like to sponsor this new thing we're doing? It's a computer
right.
show. You guys have the Apple II, blah,
yep.
blah, blah, blah. And we spent a lot of time with the Apple marketing people and their advertising people, and everybody thought it was a great idea. Everybody signed off on it. It was the big board meeting. Which we were going to, not I, but the committee that was reviewing this was going to make their presentation to the board and Steve saying, let's go ahead and sponsor this new TV show. So I was there and we made the presentation and Steve, as rude as a young Steve Jobs could be, said, why the hell should I waste my money on this? Are you going to cover products other than Apple products? I said, yes. Then why the hell should I spend my money to show my competition's products?
Right. You
and actually, that was very funny because this was right before 1984. So I'd rather spend $1 million on a Super Bowl ad.
Oh yeah, that well, man, we're
that
about
worked
out.
That
okay,
worked out.
Should, right. So you did very famously, I think, the first show about the Macintosh. Certainly, the first one I ever saw.
Yeah.
In was it 1984? Was it the
85
this one's
85?
Yeah,
show
yeah.
I don't really recall.
Yeah,
right
let's. This is an in-depth look at the Macintosh.
One of the fun early Mac shows we did was actually, we did a HyperCard show when HyperCard was a big
thing.
Remember that?
Did Bill Atkinson come on and talk about
yes,
it?
Yes,
how
exactly.
How fun.
Exactly. It was actually a HyperCard magazine at the time. It was such a big deal.
Right.
Jan Lewis was on. She,
right.
She started
right.
this HyperCard magazine.
Right. Wendy Woods worked for you.
Wendy Woods worked for us.
A lot of great people. So it's fun to see the guy who created CPM talk about
yes.
the first Macintosh.
Okay. Well, there were some issues there, too, you know, when we'd bring in any sort of Microsoft product. Garry's, wait a minute, I got to show my version of
good
this.
Good for him. I like it.
And Garry, like I mean, it. He did a lot of pioneering things. I still have the very first digital encyclopedia was on a laser disc made by a company Garry owned.
Really? No yep. kidding.
I still have it. It was fantastic.
Yeah. And little did Britannica know, but that was the beginning of the end
yes,
for the
was.
Printed
exactly.
print encyclopedia.
Yeah.
Here's the Macworld Expo, 1985, the very first Macworld Expo.
Right. Well, we had fun. We used to cover all the trade shows, Comdex, Macworld.
And they were all in San Francisco then. You were
well-placed. Boston and San Francisco.
Macworld was in Boston. Yeah, that's right.
Macworld traded between Boston and San Francisco, and then, of course, Comdex was in Vegas.
Wait.
in some ways, it's very much the same.
Exactly.
In other ways, it's very different.
Since then, in fact, what's interesting, too, I'll tell you about this. We sort of have this collection of video. It turns out to be it's a collection of evidence. Right now, I've been deposed twice in the Apple-Samsung suit.
Because of prior art.
We have products that were introduced that,
that
belie what those two companies are saying right now.
Yeah, this was introduced many years before. Right. Well, in many ways, you were making a historical record. Did you know that at the time? Did you feel that?
No, I didn't. But, I mean, obviously, we were collecting all these things. That's how we ended up on archive.org. I mean, that's a good story, too. When I was doing the Internet Cafe show, we did a show on archive.org and had Brewster Kahle on as a guest. I interviewed Brewster. And after the show, we were just sitting around chatting. I said, Brewster, you're interested in all this archiving stuff. And he was doing websites. Then it was the Wayback Machine.
Right. He did Waze, sold it for AOL for lots of money, created the Wayback Machine.
Exactly. Yep. So basically, it was websites. And he had a little bit of music on there.
Right. He had the Iuma, I think he bought. Yeah.
And I sat down. I said, you know, I have this problem. I have this tremendous collection of the history of the personal computer industry on videotape.
But this is history.
Sitting on shelves. Is there some way you'd be interested in putting that up on archive.org? He said, great idea. And we made a deal, and they actually paid for digitizing hundreds of hours of tape. And the show, as you can imagine, over the years, was on 2-inch tape, 1-inch tape, half-inch tape, you name
it. So it was in every format.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was quite a job to digitize all of
those.
And
not inexpensive.
You know, we've been trying to
pry the old screensaver shows out of NBC Universal for kind of the same reason. I mean, it was only 6 years compared to your 25.
Yeah,
There was a period of time that was a historical record.
Absolutely.
Here we go. This was the classic roundtable format where you'd have these guys in. This is VP marketing for Telos Software.
Well, this is way back. Yeah, this is still season
Joanna was an early marketing manager at Apple.
This is still season one or two, I can tell from the set.
We have processors like the Motorola 68000, Intel 286, a half a meg of memory and sort of standard. We have high resolution graphics like the Macintosh. And it leads us to a whole new level of software where graphics is a very, very important part of the application. Joanna,
Before we got into the more geek look.
Got relaxed.
We changed the set a couple of times, made it look more like a computer lab.
I liked that he was always, of course, this is fake, but it was looked like you were looking out over the Golden Gate Bridge
and
the San Francisco.
That's true. We were in a TV studio.
You were in a TV, but I like it. It felt like, here we are somewhere in the Silicon. Certainly, it did it. It placed it in Silicon Valley,
and I think
that was pretty important, actually.
Well, that was one of our selling points. We were right in the Valley.
You're there.
Access to all these people.
Yeah. I have to find, and I will find the John C. Dvorak.
That's a classic
clip. I don't know if I can find it on.
Look for IBM PS2. I think that was the machine.
He was showing off the PS2. Wasn't
it was great. Yeah, he said, "This is a great thing about this machine is it's modular. You can take it apart and put it back together." I said, "John, do it." So he took it apart, but he couldn't get it back together. It was like when you're fixing your car.
And he had the biggest aviator glasses, as well.
We had another great one.
Here he is. Here's John C. Dvorak. Boy, he does not look like the same guy.
But I think when we start talking about machines 2 or 3 years from now, when we want to go to real fast CPU speeds and 386s, it might be nice to use this bus because it's a real...
This is not the one he took it apart.
This is the one he takes it apart.
The software runs on both the clones and this machine, and IBM is going to bring us some proprietary software that probably won't be too exciting if they go...
Were there surprises as you're going along? I mean, you're seeing the world change over 25.
He reminds me of a show we did with Peter Norton. So when Norton came out with the disk, whatever, the recover your hard drive.
First thing was an unerase program.
Anyhow, so we had this computer. It was all screwed up. And Peter Norton comes in. I'm going to fix it for you.
Oh, that's brave. It's live still.
Live on tape.
Live on tape,
And so he, puts his software in there, and he's plugging away, and the sweat is pouring because he's totally screwed up this computer. He cannot get into it. He cannot get out of it. We're spending a fortune of money minute by minute in the TV studio,
God.
And he cannot get this thing to work
again.
Oh,
Lord.
So that was
Did he
John
have the
Dvorak.
Wide tie even
yeah,
then?
Yeah, that was a John Dvorak moment. I'll tell you another funny moment. We introduced the very first color laser printer from Xerox on the show.
Wow.
So I don't know when that was, in the 80s sometime.
Yeah.
Well, I was looking forward to this printer. The thing was the size of a Volkswagen. It came in on two crates, four engineers to hook it up, plug it in, test it, get ready to go. And we said, we better do a test before we actually do it on the show. And so they turn it on, they press print, steam and fire and flames start coming out of the printer. It was the funniest thing. They eventually got it to work, and the output was incredible.
That was the color, the steam. Is this Peter Norton we're looking at here?
No.
All right. He's on this show. I have to find him.
And this is the problem. And this is what the Norton Advanced Utilities.
There's a guy from Peter.
From Norton. I want to see that guy with a wide tie. I want to see Peter Norton.
Peter was a couple years after this.
Yeah. Wow. Just great. We're talking to Stuart Chaffee. And I will take your questions if you're in the chat room. As Ken from Chicago says, you understood the perils of demo fail.
Oh,
you
tried. About it.
We'll ask about some demo failures.
That was a great
line.
I worked in the hotel room last night.
I still do that. I'm trying to demonstrate the Moto phone.
Right,
half the time it works, half the time it doesn't know what the hell I said. We're going to talk more with Stuart Chaffee, Computer Chronicles. What a legend. And it's so nice to have you in studio.
Pleasure.
I really appreciate it. Our show today brought to you by our good friends at Shutterstock.com. If you are a blogger, if you are a video producer, if you use graphics, you got to know about Shutterstock. The best place to get royalty-free videos, photos, vector graphics. They have 26 million. Actually, I like to go to Shutterstock because they add more all the time. They're doing about 20,000 new images a day. Let's see. 28,275,214 royalty-free images. They added 175,000 this week. So they're kind of on a roll. I mean, great stuff. And here's the beauty part of this. You don't have to pay to browse. In fact, you can create an account. You don't even need to give them a credit card. And then use their amazing search engine. So you could look for squirrels, let's say. And you'd find a lot of squirrels, like 16,154 squirrels. But you can also say, I want happy squirrels. I don't want any. Eliminate the sad squirrels. So you could do emotions. These are all happy squirrels. You can. And these are happy. There's no question these are happy squirrels. There's even one image has dozens of happy animals in it. You can also use their spectrum tool to narrow it down by color. So you can say, well, I have a purple palette. I need a purple happy squirrel. Photos, illustrations, vectors, videos. There's a separate tab for video footage. Browse around. Get the iPad app. I think you'll really like that. It's won a Webby Award. It's just gorgeous. Once you create an account, you could save these images and videos to your Lightbox, share them with coworkers, colleagues, or just keep them for future reference. You can download individual clips or get an image package, or, and this is my suggestion, get the subscription. If you use a lot of images, if you're a blog, we have the 25 image a day subscription, so we never run out. And any subscription, you can get 30% off on your new account when you use our offer code Triangulation8. Triangulation8 for the month of August, the eighth month. Shutterstock.com. Love them. Was it hard to get advertisers in the early days? Did people understand what you were doing?
It was very hard in the middle. At the beginning, it was very hard at the end. It was very easy in the middle.
In the middle, when it was booming.
Yeah, when it was booming, it was a piece of cake. I mean, people were knocking on the door. So
yeah.
That was the very beginning. This was such a new idea.
Right.
But fortunately, digital research came in. Remember Byte magazine at the time?
Couldn't forget it.
Byte
Jerry
was a
Pournelle
sponsor.
And
exactly.
Chaos Manor.
Byte was a sponsor, digital research. And believe it or not, the biggest first sponsor was an English company nobody's ever heard of called Microfocus.
I remember them, but only because of the ads on Computer
Chronicles.
They were
the very first, but they really
made it happen.
What did
they do? Microfocus.
They can, I forget what it was, but some mini.
Money well spent.
some software written for minis they could translate into PC software.
There you go. It was an interim
exactly.
play, so
yeah, yeah.
They're not around.
So they were the first ones. After that, I mean, we had HP, we had
sure.
Intel, we had all the big.
Well, there was no competition for a long time. Nobody was doing this.
That's right. That's right. I mean, we were delivering the one audience these people wanted. They were all buying computer stuff everywhere.
Right. Do you remember some memorable demo fails? Besides the HP color printer laser bursting into flames, that's a pretty bad one.
Well, the Peter Norton one, of course.
Peter not being able to fix the computer.
John
taking apart a PS2
and not being able
to put it back together. I got to find that.
Well, early web stuff, of course, it was always a nightmare because connections were so slow. So
right.
We still have
that problem.
Yeah, we're always crashing doing web demonstrations.
But you were smart. You didn't do it live. Were you able to edit it, or was it really live to tape?
It was pretty much live to tape.
So
we
if it
did
fa-
almost
if
no editing.
If it failed.
We would do a second take if there was a total disaster.
Right.
But
there
was virtually no post-production on the show. I mean, we used to produce field packages, too. We would drop in afterwards.
Like we saw that one at the early Macworld Expo.
I mean, the classic problems we had, speech recognition shows, that never worked.
Never. They never do. They still don't.
MIDI music shows, they can never get those damn things working right. Virtual reality, that stuff never worked the first time around. So, yeah, and we got the bleeding edge from cutting edge. We were up for disaster time. And were the crew would say, oh, I would say, we're doing a mini. Oh, no, not another mini show. I'll be here at midnight before this thing works.
Were there some things you just wouldn't do? Like, I mean, were there people? Well, obviously, Michael Dell never came back. He was on once.
Well, he wasn't actually in the studio. I interviewed him in the remote package we had done. No, I'd say what we wouldn't do is stuff that was too geeky or too businessy or too commercial.
Right.
I mean, we were representing the average guy who was walking in the computer store that weekend saying, I need this. You know, which one should I buy? There's five of them.
Right.
You know, what's going to solve my problem? How should I spend my money?
Here's John C. DeWarack.
You can pop anything out. Pop it back
there we go.
Instantaneously.
Oh, Peter Bunnell. David Bunnell.
David Bunnell. Great computer publisher. Very famous.
Yes. Yeah, I think these machines are really nicely targeted.
John's clearly,
he doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
He's pretending at this point that this is exactly what he wanted.
Education and medium-sized companies. And that's not too clear yet.
What is your overall impression?
Where did that box come from?
The rest of the machines are out there now.
Well, people are saying that the IBM pricing seems to be pretty high.
David, keep on filling while John figures this out.
You start out with a high pricing.
I think John's trying to read the manual at this point.
We know that
it's
the manufacturing costs of this
that
machine
is hysterical.
Are about 40%
we did a show on robots
line
which
of PCs,
very funny.
So IBM could lower the price significantly at
a ping pong playing robot.
So you could play against this robot. So Gary and I stood on one side of the ping pong table, and the robot was on the other side.
Uh-huh.
Started playing the game. And the robot jammed Gary right in the crotch with his ping pong ball. It was like the Johnny Carson show at NBC.
Yeah.
It was. Oh!
Do you miss doing the show?
Oh, of course. Of course.
Yeah. So what happened? Did the world change?
A lot of things happened. This, 2002 was the dot-com bust.
You went right through them from 81 to 2002.
Well, but I mean, things were really rough in the valley about that period of time. I was doing this for 20 years and I was tired.
Yeah.
It was harder to raise money.
Yeah.
And because of the bust, the studio we were working with went bankrupt.
Yeah.
So I lost my deal.
Did you shoot it in San Mateo?
We shot it at, with different places over the course of the years. Mm-hmm. But at the end, we were shooting it in Mountain View at TVA Studios.
Mm-hmm.
And so it started to become more expensive to make the show.
Right.
Harder to raise the money to do the show. Right. I was exhausted doing, having done 1,000 shows or whatever it was.
No kidding.
So it's just time to take a break.
Yeah. You went to Vermont or New Hampshire for a while.
What happened at some point, we formed a company called PCTV.
Right.
With the owners of PC Connection, Mac Connection.
That's right.
And that was kind of a lot of fun. We spent 4 or 5 years doing nothing.
You did a Mac show and a PC show.
Well, we did actually. We did 5 shows a week at that time.
No kidding.
Broadcast shows. We fed shows to NBC Europe at the time. I don't know if you remember something called the Jones Computer Network.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We fed programming.
MEU, Mind Expansion University.
That's what they changed it to, Mind Extension University.
Extension, yeah.
And we were feeding 2 shows to PBS. We were doing syndicated radio stuff. So, I mean, it was like you're doing it. It was just all tech stuff.
Yeah.
All broadcast tech
stuff. And we kind of overlapped.
Yes.
I almost felt like when you gave up, I took over.
Fair enough.
Stewart's done. Okay, I'll try 1,000 shows. I always felt like what you did and what we tried to continue was more significant than just putting together a television show or even just teaching people about technology. It was really recording a massive change in society.
I mean, we didn't realize it at the time. As I say, now we
realize. You start to see it, though, after a while.
But after a while, we say, wow, we actually can look at this stuff. We have a record of all these things, all these people, all these breakthroughs, which is pretty cool, and it's kind of unique. I mean, from that period, that 20 years, nobody else was doing this.
I think Brewster was brilliant to save this at archive.org, and I thank you for suggesting it.
It was great.
In years from now, and you're already seeing that in these lawsuits, but I think in a more significant way, this will be a real historical, of real historical
value.
Yeah,
and that, just so you know, I mean, it's a big leap for us to do that, too. I mean, we were giving away a lot of intellectual
property.
That's
right. That's why we're having a hard time getting NBC to do it.
Right.
There's no value in old computer shows, really. But it's hard to let go because you put a lot of money into that and a lot of effort and
we learned a lot from that. It's the modern era of sort of the digital world. We found that giving things away has its own value.
Absolutely.
Because people discovered what we were
doing.
And the fact that it was there for free was the greatest marketing tool.
That's a lesson people have only now started to learn.
But we learned it when we put Chronicles on.
Do you remember your first time on the internet? The first time you started doing shows about the internet?
Well, actually, the very first TV show ever streamed on the web was Computer Chronicles.
Wow.
And it was called The M-Bone. You remember that?
The M-Bone.
Yes.
It was the multicast backbone that let, and you had to be in a research institution or a university.
Yes.
It was very complex.
But the guy who was running that, I can't remember, Carl can't remember his name right now, out of Washington, D.C., called me and said, hey, could we experiment and try to put your TV show on our M-Bone thing? I said, wow. Sure, let's do it. So that was actually the first time we actually did that. And that was, I mean, nobody watched it, but the principle that you actually feed a piece of video.
Unbelievable. It was a peer, as I remember, kind of a peer-to-peer system where you would pass it, you would get it, you would pass it along.
Right, an early peer-to-peer.
Yeah, and it, because of that, they could put pretty high quality
and we actually,
content on
with
slow
the
slow internet.
Believe it or not, way back when the first year of the NetCafe show, we actually had the first concert online on the web with a group called Severe Tire Damage, which was a bunch of geeks in the valley who had a rock band.
I love it. And that doesn't change either. They're still playing.
They were actually the warm-up act for a Rolling Stones online concert.
Wow. Well, and that was the big breakthrough, was the Rolling Stones on M-Bone.
Exactly, yeah.
I think opened a lot of people's eyes.
Yeah,
we've gone well beyond that in terms of audience size, but that was a huge breakthrough. I remember very well, and I think Mick Jagger saying, well, hello to all the people on the internet.
Right, exactly.
Do you remember the first shows that you did about the internet? And what was your sense when you were looking at it? It must have been 94, 95.
It was so slow.
Hard to use.
The first show we did, internet-like, was on CompuServe.
CompuServe,
that was the first thing.
Sure.
And you could literally watch the letters form on the screen. You were like 300 baud modem or something.
Yep.
So, I mean, it was very, very impractical, but it was exciting. It reminds me of...
Still exciting.
The first time I got on CompuServe reminded me of the first time I went scuba diving. I mean, it was like an entire world out there.
That's a very good analogy.
Swim around, explore that, explore that. Nothing like that had existed before.
Yeah.
So even the baby pre-web days, I mean, CompuServe and AOL and Commodore had its thing. I forget what they called it at the time.
Yeah.
You remember the Commodore thing? It was actually
Quantum Link, wasn't it?
Steve Case started Quantum Link.
Yeah, Quantum Link.
Before
became
he did AOL.
AOL. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there were all these little baby things there, and that's where we started.
Genie, MCI mail.
Right.
And nothing talked to anything else. So it wasn't an internet in the sense that there was any intercommunication. Yeah, I remember, though, being on the well.
Right.
And dropping out of the user interface to a command line.
Yes.
And suddenly you could use Archie and Gopher.
Yep, yep.
And that was my first experience, right around 93, 94, and feeling the whole world is there.
It's funny, when we did the first web show, I'm now remembering it was so funny. I remember the language we were using was so weird.
The information superhighway.
I was interviewing, what is this web thing?
Web?
Yeah.
What is that?
What does that stand for?
What's a link?
It was pretty primitive.
It was. Though. You know, now we take it so for granted. I think that's one of the values of going back, and I hope people will do this and looking at these shows. We take it so for granted. And it's so much part of our life.
You see the quality of what we can do now. I mean, it was unimaginable in the early days of the web that you could watch movies in HD quality.
Right. Real audio was a breakthrough,
Yes, exactly. Just
here's the show. And this is also – this is the one I linked to on my – when I posted that you were going to be on the show, I linked to this. This was a show you did in 95.
Today we'll show you the growing power of the internet.
Is this NetCafe?
No, this is Chronicles, but this was shot at a cyber cafe in San Francisco.
Cyber cafe.
That's what it was called then.
Yeah. Yeah. And you updated the graphics.
This is sort of second or third generation open by now.
Boy, I have vivid memories of this. Let's see what he says.
We got the commercials first.
Good. HP, let's give him a plug.
Yeah. HP was very, very supportive of us.
They started Silicon Valley. Dave Hewlett.
That was a great company.
Yeah, and the garage and the...
Additional funding provided by Intel.
And of course, that's where Woz worked and got the parts for the first Apple One. So.
And by Progress Software, client-server development tools for enterprise-class information systems.
Of course, one of the side benefits of doing the show is I have an entire house full of old computers.
Do you still?
I do still. I don't know what to do with them.
We copied. You know, I was trying to figure out how do you show people, this John Markoff, one of the great writers about technology, still works for the New York Times. How do you show two people talking about a computer and a computer on television without having them backs to you, without having them the back of the computer to you?
Every couple of years, we got a better and better way of doing that. Actually, the last couple of years, we had the best system.
Very challenging.
We had flat screen monitors now. We turned them around so we could look toward the camera and look at the monitor.
It got easier. It got easier.
But and the way of showing the screen got a lot easier, too. We used to point a camera at a screen.
That's what we did on the screensavers.
You'd have a rolling bar and all that stuff.
This is so much easier now. We just pull it up on our switcher and there it is.
That whole world changed completely.
Yeah.
And for a while, we'd get a direct feed from the computer, but we couldn't zoom in.
Right.
So we were sticking, looking
at
these,
buy a very expensive
screens and nobody
device.
Could see anything on the screen.
But we copied this format
so
on the screensaver.
We evolved.
This is very similar to what we did in 1998, 3 years later. trying to solve this problem of how do you choke screens.
This is an early web show, right?
Yeah, 1995. This isn't even the web yet.
This is pre-web, you're right.
This is Anarchy on the Mac showing how you would navigate using Archie. So these are all FTP sites.
Hard to imagine we survived all this.
Now, did you feel like, I have one of the problems I have doing what I do is I want to buy everything. Did you have problems with that? Or?
I have an illness. It's a disease.
I'm glad to know it's
buy
not just me.
Everything you see.
You get excited about it.
I know. I walk in and sometimes I never use it. But
right.
The process of buying it and shopping for it,
exactly.
I find very satisfying.
Exactly.
It's a problem.
Thank God it's gotten cheaper. And I don't have to buy $2,500 computers anymore. I can buy a $500 phone.
Well, that's another. You're talking about what's changed. Forget $5,000 computers.
Yeah.
You look at the PCs on our show, and they're $5,000, $6,000.
I remember the first 386 I had. It was a $10,000 computer from Digital Equipment.
Yeah, I remember the first Osborne sewing machine laptop.
Yeah, we got one right up there.
Yeah, it was like $8,000. People don't realize it.
But that was the breakthrough that George Morrow came out with.
Right.
Osborne was quite a breakthrough, really.
Yes, absolutely.
And K-Pro.
Right.
Suddenly it was $2,000 for a computer. I can't believe it. It's portable. It only weighs 35 pounds.
But I had the first real laptop, if you may recall, was the HP Portable.
I don't remember that one.
Little black and white screen, all software and ROM. Beautiful. I still have it. And I was on the airplane with a laptop. Nobody ever heard of it before. And I'd be typing away and they'd say, what the hell is that?
You're on a computer. What are you doing? A computer
really
in the air?
That was the revolution.
Yeah.
It was the first laptop, literally laptop portable.
And the Model 100, which followed shortly after
that.
Well,
that was a little bit. I mean, that's a classic, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that was every journalist.
But you do have a problem because at least I get rid of these things. It sounds like you've kept everything.
How can you get rid of it? It's like children. I mean... I don't know what to do. I mean, I have a couple old things I've given away or sold off.
But you kept most of this stuff?
Yeah, it's a real problem.
Wow. Do you have a museum in your house?
A virtual. Well, between the garage and an office and a spare
room.
You
see here a lot of this stuff. We have
Amigas. I saw your pet.
We have a pet. Right. The pet's over there.
I saw that. Yeah.
Apple IIs and that, Mac, early Macintosh.
I've got several Amigas hanging around.
Do you? Yeah.
Commodore 64s.
Yeah.
I have several old Apples.
Wow.
I've got TRSA Model 1 Radio Shack.
Do you remember your first personal computer? What was that?
Radio Shack.
Radio Shack.
And software on little cassettes.
Yep.
And you had a cassette player to load your software.
Half the time.
The first time I ever wrote a program was on that machine.
And then you save it out to the cassette.
And you saved it out on the cassette.
If you're lucky.
I wrote a program on how to play blackjack using Radio Shack Basic. It was the most exciting thing I'd ever done.
It is.
I love programming because it makes you think about all the things you assume.
Right.
I mean, simply to tell a program, how do you tell it one number is bigger than another number? That's not an easy concept to tell a computer.
Right.
To us, we just take it for granted. Four is bigger than two.
Right.
But have a computer program understand that was a fascinating problem.
It's like teaching a very slow child how to do something.
My very first machine.
You never forget your first, do you?
Well, it wasn't that kind of relationship, but I never forgot it.
Well, I don't know.
You spend more time
with it probably than you do your loved ones.
And I have all these old software that you bought on the cassette for the TRS. Dancing Demon. I don't know if you remember that.
Yes.
Great little thing. You program this guy to dance.
Yes.
It was wonderful stuff.
We have a Color Computer 3, a Coco, which Curtis B., who's in our chat room, dropped off. We have it. So I don't know where the Coco ended up, Curtis B.
Yeah, that's
right. But he was programming it. We had it on screen. It was a lot. It's really a lot of fun. Those classes. We're starting talking to Stuart Chaffee, the creator really of computer television, to whom I own a huge debt, because what we do wouldn't exist without Computer Chronicles, starting in 1981.
Hard to believe.
Amazing. And continuing right up into the 2000s.
I'll tell you what's really amazing. These shows are all online. I can see getting emails from 60-year-old guys saying, oh, I used to watch your show. I get emails from 18-year-old kids.
That's
neat. This is the coolest stuff I've ever seen. I never realized what had happened, when I was 1 year old.
Hope they're looking at these because
I'm amazed that these kids have get a kick out of watching these shows.
And at least it will; they won't take for granted the amazing.
They appreciate the growth.
What they have today. I mean, you have in your pocket in a small portable device. You have more power than we even imagined possible.
Absolutely.
And what we really didn't understand was that it could be always on the internet, everywhere you go, always connected.
Well, to me, that's the biggest revolution of all.
Huge is
number one, Wi-Fi and mobile.
Yeah,
those two things together. That's the biggest change I've seen in 30 years.
It's more than technology because it changes information. In suddenly, facts are totally available.
Exactly. I mean, I think as a student, when I was doing writing papers,
think about
that.
You had to go
to
the library and find the fact.
And you think, frankly, about older people and disabled people who have access to everything.
Marvelous.
Communications,
yeah.
And their children and their grandchildren, yep. And they don't have to get in a car and go anywhere. It's fantastic.
Well, and I think you and I have talked to the people who did all of this, and that's always been a great privilege.
Absolutely.
And to get to talk to those great minds and those brilliant thinkers and to be part of that process. But I'm going to give you some credit. We can give ourselves some credit that we also made it possible for the world to see what was going on and to make it grow and to spread
the
word.
Well, that was the whole point. I thought one of the things we tried to do in Chronicles and one of the things I tried to do as a person on the show was basically be like what I call UN translator. Take geek and translate it into English. Because you had normal people wanted to figure this out. And generally, the geek community couldn't speak to normal people.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like this little bridge in the middle, which we could translate what the geeks were talking about,
right,
the normal guys,
right,
at the other end.
And that has always been the hardest thing to do, frankly,
right,
is to find somebody who understands the geek,
yep,
can speak it in English, is not an easy thing to do. All of these episodes going from 1983, the first national show, you see, these are the keywords.
Right.
You could pick a keyword, Larry Magid, logo, LAN. Random access.
Well, random access. In the early years, we used to do a 5-minute newscast at the end of each show with what happened this week, what
was
new.
I remember very well. That was how you found out. Yep.
So we had this little, here's what happened, here's the products that were introduced.
That was the only technology news
it was.
I got
we
for
stopped
years.
That after a while because everybody started doing it. So it wasn't as important.
Play a little bit of a random access. I don't know what
let's
year
see,
this
let's
is
see
from
who was
or
doing
anything.
It.
Access file this week.
Is Kate. Okay.
IBM is introducing two new top-of-the-line PS2 computers. The new Model 90 and Model 95 will be based on the Intel 486 microprocessor.
It also gives you some perspective about all the stuff we talk about today. We get so excited about the new Motorola phone or the new LG phone. And in a few years, it's going to be just as relevant as the new IBM PS2.
Well, you look, I mean, we have shows, you know, we did many shows about the Palm Pilot.
Yes.
About Newton, about all these things that, you know, are gone a long time ago.
I want to ask you in a little bit about some of your favorite guests, some of the people you enjoy talking to the most. We're talking to one of my favorite guests, Stuart Chaffee, the creator of Computer Chronicles and a legend in the business. And people were so excited. I also want anybody who has a question to go to our chat room if you're watching live, and we'll give you a chance to ask Stuart your questions as well. Our show today brought to you by Audible.com, audiobooks. You know, the greatest thing about Audible is that there is lots of time in your life when you cannot read. You would be stuck, I don't know, listening to podcasts, maybe on your commute, at the gym, walking the dog, doing the dishes. Maybe you'd like to get books back into your life. It's certainly what Audible did for me way back in 2000 when I joined Audible. I have more than 500 books now in my audio library, and I'm so grateful because I really wouldn't have ever read those books. I just didn't have time. Audible has 100,000 plus titles, not just books, but they've got the great courses now, which is so exciting. I'm glad they brought those in. They've got radio shows, comedy performances, lectures, speeches. One of the neat things they've done is collate some of the great speeches of our time. They're often free on audible.com. Here's what I want you to do. Visit audible.com and browse around. What is your favorite subject? Do you like fiction? Do you like nonfiction? You want to read history, science? There's some great science, psychology. There's also thrillers. There's great science fiction. They have some of the best science fiction. In fact, one of the things I really applaud Audible for is they've taken some of the classics in science fiction that were never turned into audiobooks because they were, frankly, pulp fiction. The publisher didn't have any money to do that. And they've recorded them on their own. It's part of their Frontiers series. And there's an amazing selection of fabulous classic science fiction from Isaac Asimov, Orson Scott Card. We were talking about Ender's Game is coming, the movie. The worst thing in the world would be for you to see the movie and before you read the book, because Ender's Game is one of those books where you just have to read the book first. I'm not going to say why. I'm just telling you. You can thank me later. The 20th anniversary edition of Ender's Game is on audible.com in a brand new recording. It came out a few years ago and it is fabulous. It is an essential. It could be yours free. All you have to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/triangulation. Pick a book. Enjoy the book. And you have a month to listen to it. If you cancel in the first 30 days, you'll pay nothing. That book is yours to keep. But I have a feeling you'll want to stick around. audiblepodcast.com/triangulation. Triangulation. You're going to love it. We thank Audible for their support of our show. Stuart Chaffee is our guest from Computer Chronicles. Some of your favorite people that you've had on?
Well, the number one favorite guy would be Gary, my co-host.
Yeah.
I mean, Gary...
How long did he do the show?
About the first 12 years, I guess.
That long?
Oh, yeah, for quite a while. Gary's problem was he was too much of a gentleman. He wasn't a killer businessman kind of guy. Brilliant mind. As you know, he taught, actually, at the Naval School in Monterey. Great programmer. Sweetheart of a guy. A decent man in a business that... Which was hard to succeed if you were a decent.
Well, if you were up against Bill Gates.
Yeah. So, I mean, I love Gary. He was just such a good guy. He was such a pleasure to work with. I mean, he was a big shot at the time, as you know.
He wrote CPM, as you mentioned.
Yes, of course. I mean,
which was the operating system for personal computing until IBM came out with its personal computer in 1981.
And, I mean, he was a pioneer in so many ways. He was a pioneer, as I mentioned earlier, in optical disc technology. And all kinds of stuff. He had his own version of, remember GEM, graphic environment?
Yeah.
So he had his own sort of Windows environment before Microsoft had Windows. GEM was his, absolutely.
I didn't know that, yeah.
So, I mean, he was a brilliant guy, a nice guy, a gentleman, a pleasure to work with. He could answer any question I ever had about technology, and in a polite way. But he didn't have that killer instinct to kill the competition and to make money, which was to his credit. Made him such a great guy.
He valued his wife's birthday more than the deal with IBM.
He also suffered from that. And his loss in that business to Microsoft literally killed him.
Yeah.
I mean, he...
Really?
He became an alcoholic, gained weight, got fat, got into a fight in a bar, and died.
That's terrible.
Horrible story.
Yeah.
It's matter of fact, I've always thought the story about Microsoft and Bill Gates and Gary Kildall and DRI... is, I think, better than The Social Network, than that story about
that would be a movie.
It's a wonderful, wonderful story. Most people don't even know about this story.
Well,
it's a great story.
And I just learned more about it because we knew, I always thought it was kind of legendary, but that Gary Kildall was flying his plane when IBM came to call.
We actually did a half-hour special on Gary after he died.
Did you?
It's on the
so archive, that's, yeah. We could find that story.
Yeah, you should take a look at that.
And then they went up, they said, okay, well... I guess maybe DR-DOS isn't right for us. Let's go to Seattle.
Well, of course, they signed a deal with both companies at the time,
as you recall.
That was part of the deal. But
That's right. You could get DR-DOS on the early IBM.
What Gary didn't think of at the time is IBM had the right to only use one of the two, even though they had two deals to the exclusion of the other.
Yeah.
And that's how they ended up screwing Gary.
And Bill Gates didn't even have a DOS, but he said, I'll get you a DOS.
Gates was a good salesman. Gary was not a good salesman.
He's a good businessman.
Yeah. And so Gary's my number one. I mean, he was a great
That's
guy
neat.
To work with.
12 years. Wow.
Yeah. And we had sort of a regular army of people. You mentioned Larry Magid, who was on the show quite often. George Morrow, as you mentioned, was on the show. Mike Elgin was often on the show.
Was he? I didn't know
Tim
that.
Tim Horan was often
Mike's
on the show.
Mike's a good friend of
Tim was
Marshall's.
Our sort of Mac guy. Mike was a sort of Windows guy.
Yeah.
So these people we had on. We actually had, I don't know if you remember, Heidi Roizen in the old days.
Very well. Loved
Apple
Heidi.
Apple Software.
Yep. Yep.
So she was on quite often. Jan Lewis, as I mentioned before, who was a Big Mac person. These were people we worked with over and over again. First of all, I respected them for taking the time. We didn't pay these people.
Right.
We didn't pay anybody. They did it because they loved what they were doing.
Well, but they should. You didn't pay Gary?
We did not pay Gary.
Wow.
We did it all for nothing. Just because he thought this was the right thing to do.
That's a good business model. I should really look at this. I should investigate that.
But, I mean, these were just great people. They really loved what they were doing. They loved the fact that the world was kind of changing.
Well, again, you have front row seats at one of the most amazing times in human history.
Yeah. In terms of, and I would say one of the most interesting guys I've ever talked to is Bill Gates. Gates is a good guy. I know people think he's horrible and they hate him and all that. Well, look at what he's doing right now.
Not anymore. You know, he's...
No, exactly.
He's like Andrew Carnegie.
Exactly.
He has completely transformed his image.
Even in the old days, when he was, you know, the killer Bill Gates, he's a really smart guy. And if you just got over... I mean, he's a super competitive guy and all that. But if you got over that BS part of it, it was really good. And I worked with him a lot. We did, I don't know if you remember, we did the series called Computer Bowl.
Right.
Which was...
Loved the Computer Bowl.
The quiz show.
I always played that at the home version of the game.
And so Gates and I co-hosted that for many years.
Right.
And he's a stickler. I mean, he wouldn't put up with anything unless it was exactly
100%. I wonder if we have any video of the computer
I'm sure there's a lot of computer
Did you do that? Was it at Comdex you did that?
No. That was done for the Computer Museum in Boston.
That's right. It was in Boston,
It was done as a fundraiser. We did about 10 of those. That was really fun because we had all the big shot guys from the East and the West compete on a computer trivia game.
Yeah, it would be the East versus the West.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you can find one of those, they were really a lot of fun.
I want to see if I can find one with Bill Gates. This is from 1990.
Well, there's a funny story with Gates, actually. Let's see which one this
is. Let's see which one this is.
We need an answer. A Mac.
Pat McGovern.
The year Gates IDG. Was on the West team was really funny because we got into an argument once about who had the right answer, and he wouldn't let me on. That's not right, I'm telling you. It says right here.
Bill knows. He's always right. That's
he
right.
He is a competitor.
He was super, super smart.
Oh, yeah, you bet. You bet.
Is super, you super bet. Smart.
And they say a good guy beneath the competitor.
Having...
Oh, it's Pat McGovern.
Bob Frankston.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy who created VisiCalc.
Yeah.
That's a good team on the East.
Copy of VisiCalc.
You know, you can download it now. It's 64K.
Okay.
It takes about 3 seconds on modern internet speeds to download. I think there must be. You tell me if I'm wrong. But if I think about people like Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, a huge drive in those guys. You got to be smart. You got to be talented. You got to be good at this and that. But the drive—it's
like an athlete's competition. Sense of
they
competition—they
got—they
gotta win.
They,
I've
that's
got
right.
To win, that's what drives these people.
Is that true? You think universally, or was it was certainly true of those two?
I think it's true of all those guys that I met at the time. Absolutely.
Yeah.
They were. It was just like talking to a football.
Andy
player.
Grove at Intel.
Well, Andy was a little bit different. I would say Andy didn't have that. Andy was a much more intellectual kind of guy.
Yeah. He did write a book called "Only the Paranoid Survive."
But most of these guys, I mean, I don't remember half the names right now, but they wanted to win. They were just vicious competitors. Vicious. And
Larry Ellison, did you run across
Larry
him?
Larry was a pretty good guy, actually. Yes, I'd interview Larry. I was surprised because I'd heard horrible stories about
Oracle. Of Oracle, and he's one of the richest men in the world.
Yes, I mean, I interviewed him. I was pretty decent. He's a pretty funny guy, very clever guy, very decent guy, I thought. I never had trouble with Larry.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Oracle's another story. I think some people have troubles with the way Oracle does business.
Yeah, how they do business, do you see people change? I mean, Bill Gates went from being just kind of a little nerdy guy and suddenly the richest man in the world. Did you see that over time, those people change?
Not while when I was working with Bill,
he was already somebody. He was already Bill Gates.
Yeah, I mean, it's only really the last 10 years when he's just been doing the foundation. I think
he's changed. He's changed
he's
now.
He's gained weight and he's changed.
Yeah. Gained weight usually means happier.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, or at least well married.
I'll tell you one of the most interesting guys we had on the show. You remember a guy named Jared Lanier?
Oh, yeah. In fact, we're trying to get him on the show because what's interesting about Jared, he was the big VR guy with the dreadlocks.
Right.
And now he's become kind of an anti-technology guy. You are not a gadget,
I thought he was a really, really interesting, philosophical, thoughtful, intellectual kind of guy. He was
brilliant.
Not just a gadget guy.
No.
I had a lot of fun talking to Jared.
Yeah, I think he's got a new book, and I think he's booked for the show sometime soon. I'll have to check with.
No, I got a kick out of it too. You know, I interviewed Sergey Brin before anybody had ever heard of Google.
Yeah.
What's Google?
Yeah.
We had him on the show.
We have a couple of graduate students from Stanford here who've created something they call Google.
Yes, exactly.
You don't know when you're doing that is this going to be big or not. Although I have to say, those guys, you kind of felt like something was going on with Google.
No question.
You kind of knew that they had Alta Vista was the big search engine. And that they had done something very special.
Yeah.
Very different.
Well, there were a whole bunch of search engines that you know at the time.
Yeah. And they're gone now.
But, yeah, I remember interviewing Sergey, and that was, I mean, you could tell this was a really bright guy.
Yeah. Philo and Wang, founders of Yahoo. Did you get to meet them, too?
Yes, yeah. Jerry Wang, we had him on the show.
Right? I remember, I don't know exactly when this was, must have been the early 90s, we carried a camera. And we're able to actually say, this is where Yahoo's servers are. It's just a couple of computers in a rack and a little, you know, tilt up and somewhere in Silicon Valley.
But you think, okay, you think back at Yahoo, the whole built Yahoo was human beings.
Humans. That didn't scale.
Not an algorithm, right?
Did not scale. Yeah.
Right. And there was actually, I mean, the early days of, what was it called before, what it's called now, the predecessor to about.com.
Oh, I don't know.
It was human beings also. I can't remember what they called it before about.
Yeah.
But, you know, people were trying to have, you know, human beings.
No one understood at the time how big this was going to get, internet was. You would never, knowing what you know now, say, oh, yeah, we can catalog every website with humans. You would not even dream of doing that.
Right.
And that was probably one of the insights that made Larry and Sergey so successful,
On the other hand, getting back to the archive.org, I mean, that was one of Brewster Kahle's brilliant moments.
Saving it all.
Exactly. It's cheaper to do everything than to decide what to save and what to throw out. That was his brilliant conclusion.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had Rooster on this show. He's a fascinating guy. Do you feel like sometimes that you missed out, that the revolution was happening around you? You are the scribe writing it down, but you're not getting to participate? Did you ever feel like, gosh, I'd like to play?
Yeah.
I want to do a startup?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you get tempted?
Absolutely.
Did you?
Well, there's all this stuff around. Yeah, I want to play this game too. You know, I want to be one
You see these guys all also going from zero to billions and saying, oh, man, I missed that train. What?
I'm actually chairman of the board of a startup right now.
Are you good? You get to do it.
Yes.
Yeah. It's probably a little different when you're actually
doing it.
Totally
different. Totally different, yes. Yeah. But now I have the feeling, too. I mean, we were exposed to all these guys, and all these guys were making tons of money. People were coming to me and saying, well, why don't you do what they're doing?
Right.
You're just a dumb journalist. You're not going to make any money doing this.
You know, it's funny. I went through that period very early on, and I went to work for a startup, which later became Macromedia and then was purchased and created Flash and all that. But it was the early days. I think it was a second or third employee. And I only did it for a few months. And I realized I would rather I didn't want to focus on one product. I was having so much more fun playing with it all, seeing it all. And I realized that's what I really want to do. Whether I'm going to be a billionaire or not isn't germane. What I love to do is see it all. And I think that's one of the advantages you and I have is that we get to see it all.
Yeah,
and we don't have to narrow down to this one product or this one category.
And, I mean, you know, I'm basically a journalist. I mean, my interest is telling stories.
Exactly.
And I did work with another startup for a while, putting together, I won't talk about the company right now, but it was fun to do. The technology was great, but the pressure for cash flow and the business pressures were so
hellacious.
Great.
Yeah.
It could drive you nuts, and you really just lost the ability to focus on the product and the development and the kind of
things. It's much more fun doing what we're doing.
No question about it.
I really learned that lesson. I got out of it. I never after that, never looked back, never said, no, I wish I were doing a startup. I wish I were making millions. Now I am actually kind of doing a little startup, but this is not quite the same because I'm doing what I love, and I continue to get to do the shows, and that's what I'm.
But
really
being the journalist is fun because I mean you have your finger in everything.
Absolutely,
you're not just focused on one particular
Absolutely.
Sector.
I see you had Laurie Anderson on when she was a street performer, playing with a funny helmet, playing the little Casio on the corners of New York City.
Yeah, I mean, I have to like jog my memory. I mean, we had thousands of people.
I know.
Over 20
I'm surprised
years.
You can remember any of it, frankly.
So,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's
Laurie. Oh, I remember her. Well, thank God it's all online. You can go to archive.org and see it all. It's all there. Every show from
every Computer Chronicles, every Net Cafe show is online right now. Yeah. So it's like 1,500 shows altogether.
Unbelievable. And they've done a great job, or you did, or somebody
generally,
did a great job.
Generally. We still have some problems there.
Yeah.
But most of the shows are there. Most of the shows are
561 Computer Chronicles, 123 Net Cafes.
Right. And we also, by the way, have foreign language versions of these shows online, too. So Chronicles, you know, was seen around the world. So it was in Spanish, French, and Arabic, in addition to English. So we put a lot of the foreign language versions online also, which are amazingly popular. I don't understand it.
They were you translated, or were they their own
local
hosts? No,
our show translated. No, it was my show.
So you're speaking Spanish suddenly.
I'm speaking Spanish and French and Arabic. It's quite funny.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't realize that they had done that.
Yeah, we were on over 100 countries around the world. It was quite fascinating.
People are very interested in what's going on.
Well, we were Silicon Valley. That was the big buzzword.
Right.
And everybody wanted to know
you were
in
the heart of it.
Valley.
Yeah. Do you feel like when you went to New Hampshire, you kind of lost out?
Yeah, that's why I came back here.
Yeah. You did come back. Good. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the opportunity was there. So we started PCTV, and it was, you know, it was a big opportunity to get some big resources behind what we're doing and grow from just doing Computer Chronicles to doing a lot of stuff like you're doing now.
Right.
But, yeah, it was sort of a Boston suburb, so we weren't totally out of it.
Oh.
But
you think of New Hampshire, you think, like, I'm up in the maple trees.
No, I mean, it was Boston,
it was
basically.
Boston.
But it's
still,
that's a different culture, right? I mean, that's the old mainframe mini culture over there.
Route 128,
It was not the sort of the PC culture you have here.
Yeah. I like it here.
Yes.
What do you think the secret is? Why is Silicon Valley, why did it happen here, and why does it continue to thrive? I mean, even in the dot-com days, the mobile days, you know, South Park in San Francisco is still...
Yeah. Well, it's organic. Number one, it's HP.
Started with HP
starts
in the
with
30s.
Starts with HP.
Yeah.
Starts with Stanford and Berkeley.
Yep. So you had the brains.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, and
if you look at Stanford, that's where Jerry came from,
right.
David came from,
exactly.
Sergey came from, Larry came from.
Exactly.
They were all graduate students at Stanford.
Yeah. I mean, what's surprising to me is that Microsoft didn't start here.
Yeah, yeah.
Microsoft actually started in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
And he chose Seattle instead of San Francisco,
yes,
but he was from Seattle. Stuart, I could go on and on reminiscing about the good old days. It's so much fun. I'm really glad it's online. I'm glad people can go to archive.org. I'm glad you're back in the Bay Area. Do you have TV shows in the future? Is there something
we're
you
working
do?
On some stuff. I've actually been doing a lot of non-tech stuff lately, but we're actually putting together a couple new ideas for tech stuff. So
good.
We may be back.
The world is waiting. They'd like to see more of Stuart Chaffee. I guarantee
hope,
you,
I
judging
hope.
From the reaction. I tweeted this yesterday. People were going crazy.
Oh, cool.
Loving the idea. What's he doing? What's he up to?
That's funny. You know, when we talk about what you're doing, I hate to Google myself because you can't find terrible things people say about you. But I had a big meeting a couple weeks ago, and I figured these guys are going to Google me, so I better Google myself to see what they're going to find out.
Yes.
And, you know, I put my name up there, and, you know, Google gives you these suggested search terms, and the top one was Stuart Chaffee death.
Oh, no.
I have to find out I died by going on Google and going online.
People are trying to figure out if you're still alive.
Yes.
So, Stuart, get out there.
There were lots of posts. Is he dead or is he alive?
Whatever happened to him? Oh, man. Well, you should come back here. We'll tell the tech world that
so I'm
Stuart
alive.
Is
I'm
alive.
Still here.
You can come back anytime. Come back anytime. And everybody should go to Stuart Chaffee Computer Chronicles because you get the link to the Wikipedia article and then all the episodes. And Chaffee.com, you still have quite a few.
We're working on we had a computer chronicles.com site. We took it down when the show went off. We're bringing it back up.
Chronicles or something like that?
No, it's just computerchronicles.org.
Okay.
And.com.
You're going to bring it back?
We're going to bring it back because I'm just surprised, as I mentioned before, there's still so much interest in the shows.
Yes.
And we're having trouble, and Chaffee.com is just sort of my general business website. So we're going to bring it back and have links to all the shows and more, you know, more of the stuff we can do these days, social media stuff we didn't do before.
Yeah. You know, we've been trying to do, and this is why we're trying to get the rights back to the old shows, is we want to show the old shows and then comment on it and say, now look what you can do now, or here's what that would be today. And
well, to see the
fun.
Dumb things that happened many years ago is really fun. We have a we actually put together once some classic old Chronicle shows for a trade show, a Comdex or something, I don't remember what it was. And it was a great thing. It was a guy from Microsoft who was showing off whatever was Windows 2 or something at the time. He said, of course, this is a temporary solution. The real operating system of the future is OS 2.
Well, he might have been right. Had things gone a little bit differently, I think he probably was right. That's another thing anybody who covers this business learns is the best product does not always win by any means. Well, Stuart, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming up here to Cowtown and spending some time with us.
I think it's really a kick. All these antique stores in here in the middle.
Yeah.
You're doing this weekend
fun?
Tech.
Kind of got an antique studio, too, actually. People can find out more at the website, Chaffee.com, Cheifet, or at Chaffee on Twitter.
You got it.
Thank you, Stuart. Thank you for joining us on Triangulation. We do this show each and every week at Wednesdays, about 3:30 in the afternoon, Pacific time, 6:30 Eastern. Time, and that'd be about midnight UTC. Please watch live because, of course, the chat room is a fabulous way for me to do all my research. You can just ask the questions and I'll parrot them back to our guests. But if you can't, we have on-demand audio and video available at twit.tv/TRI, or you can subscribe. That's the best thing, probably. That way you get it every week. iTunes has it. Every podcast catcher has it. Dog Catcher, Instacast, Pocket Cast, all of that. Thanks for joining us, and I should get a cup of coffee. My Tonks coffee, is it here? Where's my coffee? Our show, I should mention one more sponsor. If you're into coffee, tonks.org, tonx.org/triangulation. You can get a free sample of their beans. They do something really interesting. They're connoisseurs. They go around the world, follow the sun, so that they're always getting the freshest beans from small individual family farms, directly geographically single sourced. They bring them back to their Tonks facility in Southern California, roast them to perfection, and ship them to you within 24 hours. So you get incredible fresh roasted single variety beans. I just got some beans. I cannot wait to try. They were from Ecuador or somewhere. I can't wait to try them. I want you to try it for free. Tonks.org, tonx.org/triangulation. You can get a sampler. And then do what I do, which is the every other week subscription. I just love getting it in the mail. Delicious. My mouth's watering right now. Coffee from Tonks. I wanted to thank them, too. They provide our coffee. Tonks.org/triangulation. Thanks to Stuart Chaffee. Thanks to you for joining us. And we'll see you next time on Triangulation.